Hello, welcome back to Hearth and Fire. My name is Michael Sisko, and I am super excited because I have a huge guest who needs absolutely no introduction, Dr. E. Michael Jones. How are you?
Good. Good to be here.
Thank you. Thank you. So, I don't know if, you probably get this quite a bit. I am Orthodox Christian. However, I do watch you quite a bit on YouTube. I haven't had a chance to read your books, but they're on my list. There's just too much to read and not enough time. but you being, I've seen you talk about Logos, and you make a lot of people, especially myself, even other Orthodox Christians that I know, take our faith a little more seriously. So I thank you for that.
Well, that's good.
So, not sure. I know we're on different sides of the schism, but a lot of it overlaps quite a bit. So,
yes.
We'll just hop right into it. I saw you comment somewhere about our history in the West of the last 200 years. So, from your perspective, what is the current state of the West, and how did we get here?
200 years or so, the great cataclysm was the French Revolution, which was an attempt to get out from under the Catholic Church in France, assert reason as the primary value in society, without defining what that term meant or defining how the church was the opposite of that reason. And so as a result, it led to a number of kind of formalization of a number of categories, faith and reason as dichotomies, separation of church and state, a number of different dichotomies that have science and religion is one way of putting it. All of these things are the kind of the dichotomies that we live with on a daily basis. The logic of this break with tradition has been working itself out over the last 200 years. And that's sort of what I'm doing with the book that I'm writing right now, trying to explain how this idea has been developing over this period of time to the point where it is today. So if you would had told I don't know, let's say Voltaire, that the epitome of reason and rational behavior was homosexuality, he would have laughed at you, because that would have been the epitome of irrational behavior, even to someone like Voltaire, even to someone in the Enlightenment. And so the question is, well, how did you get there? How did we get there from here? Because that seems to be the situation we're in right now. We live in a world where the homosexual is the ideal citizen. All you have to do is look at the campaign of our gay mayor, Pete Buttigieg, and you realize the only thing this person has going for him, the only reason he's been anointed by the oligarchs as their candidate, is because he's a homosexual. And he epitomizes this strain of liberation that began with the Enlightenment, with the French Revolution. Okay. So how did we get here? Well, you know, I describe a part of this trajectory in my book, Libido Dominandi. And one of the people that you have to understand if you want to know how we got from there to here is the Marquis de Sade, who was the man who, in effect, created the French Revolution from his cell in the Bastille. He urged the crowds on, and they sacked the Bastille, and he got out. And that was the beginning of the French Revolution. While he was in the Bastille being held prisoner, he wrote a number of books in which he articulated his philosophy, Justine being one of them, became an underground bestseller throughout the 19th century. And in that, he basically articulated the materialism, that was implicit or explicit in a book like Julien de la Mettrie's Man and Machine, and said that man is made up of atoms and there's no point to anything. The only point to anything is sexual pleasure. And sexual pleasure to the detriment of anybody who fell victim to your advances. Woman is a machine for voluptuousness. That's what he said, directly from taking it from man the machine to its logical sexual conclusion. And so he also understood that once you unleash, you break the old order. You have to, the state has to defend itself. It has to maintain order. And so there was a new way of defending order, and basically by enslaving man to his passions. And that is the regime that we have today. That's why we're having a debate on the internet, about the internet, about hate speech, about violence, about speech that leads to violence. Part of what is excluded from this debate is any consideration of pornography. Obscenity is completely missing from this debate, which shows you how the whole situation has changed over the past 60 years. Pornography has become a mainstream part of life. It's part of the internet. No one's talking about removing it from the internet. We're talking more about removing anyone who objects to it from the internet. And I'm saying this is the case simply because pornography is a form of political control. This is the implementation of the Marquis de Sade via Wilhelm Reich, and then via all the people in Hollywood who implemented Wilhelm Reich's ideas about sex as a form of control. That's the background to the situation that we're in, that no one's talking about. Because the people who manage the culture, who manage discourse, who manage the debate, who manage the narrative, the mainstream media and the people who control them, don't want you to talk about it. And now finally, this new alternative showed up, the internet, and now people are talking about there. And now the oligarchs are determined to shut it down because they want to maintain their control over everyone at any cost whatsoever. So that's a rough approximation of how we got here today, where we are.
Do you think the system that came out of the both the French and the American revolutions, I guess like a republic or popular government in general, are they kind? Do you think that they're designed in a way that allows the oligarchs to kind of take power?
Well, if you're talking about the United States, the answer is yes, of course. That's why the United States, the founding fathers were, first of all, a small group of people who were not representative of the larger population of the United States. They were Whigs. They were well-to-do people. They were part of the merchant class. They lived in cities. They could communicate easily with each other, and they could easily exclude people like farmers in Pittsburgh from taking any part in this debate. They completely monopolized the debate, and they created a system that served their interests, the interest of the oligarchs. At that time, the big issue was creditor versus debtor. The debtors wanted paper money, the creditors wanted gold and silver as their money. And the creditors won, and the creditors created a revolution within years of the revolution, when the creditors bought up bonds at pennies on the dollar, and then convinced the government to pay them back full face value in gold. The people were so outraged that it led to Shays' Rebellion. Okay, so the oligarchs, the secret to this new regime, these new forms of government, is to give the people the illusion of popular sovereignty while retaining the reality of oligarchic control. That is what you do in the United States. That is what the United States is all about from the beginning. And the main instrument for oligarchic control in the United States was the Supreme Court. There were other instruments, but this was the main instrument. It has remained an instrument of oligarchic control to this day. And so to this day, there will never be a referendum on abortion. Abortion gets imposed on the country through the Supreme Court in 1973. there will never be, when there is a referendum on something like gay marriage, even in California, it goes down to defeat. And so the oligarchs then have to impose it on us after the people reject it. And that's the Obergefell decision. So it's always been what I said, the illusion of popular sovereignty combined with the reality of oligarchic control. And if there's ever a man who has perfected this, it is our gay mayor from South Bend, Indiana. He has been a tool of the oligarchs from the minute he stepped into office. He's been doing nothing but running for president from the day he got into office. Within months of getting elected, he up and left and went to Afghanistan simply to pad his resume so that he could claim that he was a veteran. He sat in a room and played video games for 9 months, but somehow this he had to do this to pad his resume. And now he talks about this and lords it over people like Donald Trump and other people. So that is the fun. He's a classic example of the fundamental reality that I just explained.
Is there a solution to fix this within the framework of our current system, or do we kind of have to look towards something else, maybe closer to what we had pre-Enlightenment?
You cannot go back in time. The other aspect we have to consider is that all of human history is part of God's plan, including, and there's never been a time when history has operated without God's guidance. It's called divine providence. There are people like Hegel who tried to come up with an explanation of this, and he referred to it as the cunning of reason. Die List der Vernunft, because you look at history, he looked at someone like Napoleon, and how could God allow Napoleon to do what he did? He basically was an enemy of the church. Hegel was a Lutheran, but Napoleon ended up conquering Prussia. Hegel wasn't a Prussian, but he was a big supporter of Prussia's hegemony over the rest of Germany. And he said, basically, it's human passion that rules history in certain countries, which are the cutting edge of history. The state is the vehicle of history, not the individual, but some individuals incorporate the being of the state, and Napoleon was one of them. And so he spread basically the French Enlightenment throughout Europe because that was part of God's passive will. Not that God wanted the Enlightenment, not that God wants any type of evil, but he allows wicked men to bring about the demise of some system and bring in a new system. So I think the man in our day who is the equivalent of Napoleon is Donald Trump. Donald Trump has been appointed by God to bring about the end of the American empire, and he's succeeding masterfully at doing this. He is wrecking the American empire with the help of people who think they are promoting it and promoting its cause. And I'm talking specifically about people like John Bolton and Mike Pompeo, who are completely reckless psychopaths who have no respect for the rule of law, who believe in, they're total Nietzscheans, who believe in nothing but the will to power and believe that their will is the rule of law. And they're bringing about the end of the very empire they think they're defending. The situation, the standoff in Iran is an example of what I'm talking about. The whole cohesion that has come about within the Eurasian landmass. The empire, Trump's absolutely irrational demands, his irrationality in abrogating the nuclear deal with Iran has done the exact opposite of what he intended. And this has been the path of empire for years now. The Jewish neocons got us involved in the war in Iraq, commandeered the whole government of the United States of America, got us involved in a war that served only Israel's interest. And what happened? What was the net result of that war? Well, they removed Iran's main enemy in the Middle East. They removed Saddam Hussein, which then turned Iran into a regional power. This is exactly what I'm talking about here. And this is what we're witnessing in our time. So, you know, when the empire starts to collapse, we've lost our identification with America. There's no such thing as an American anymore. In order to, the classic example of this is Trump now promoting gay rights and overturning gay anti-sodomy laws throughout the world. In order to be an American, you have to be a part of a special identity group, homosexual is now the current identity group. This is destroying the cohesiveness of America, and it's bringing about the end of the empire. There's no question about it.
Yeah, I've heard you mention the collapse, the inevitable collapse of the empire, and perhaps something better rising out of the ashes. Can you at least kind of speak to what that might look like?
Yeah, this is the idea comes from Giambattista Vico, who was the man who really saved philosophy from the English British skeptics in the 18th century, and from Descartes. He talked about everything human grows and then dies, and he says empires are human creations, so they have the same trajectory. And the classic instance in his from his perspective was the Roman Empire. Obviously, he lived in Italy. He lived in Naples. They lived in the aftermath of the collapse of the Roman Empire. So it died of its own excess. It died because of usury had enslaved the entire population. So you had a world of slaves working for a few rich people, which is also characteristic of our age. And the result was that they couldn't defend themselves anymore. They had to pay for mercenaries. When they ran out of money, the mercenaries took over the country. And the mercenaries were primarily the Goths, who crossed the Danube in the middle of the 4th century and ended up in the middle of, by the beginning of the 5th century, had taken over Rome, and it became the Gothic kingdom. That was the collapse of Rome, but something better came in its place, namely the Holy Roman Empire. That was basically the Germanic principalities converting to Christianity. And largely through the work of the Benedictine monks who established monasteries along the Rhine and the Danube, especially the Danube, and they brought civilization and taught the Germans how to work. So it's not the end of the world. It may seem like the end of the world, but it's not, because God's plan is that empires will exist for a certain time and then they will pass away. And they leave some type of legacy behind. So the legacy in many ways of the American Empire is the spread of the English language throughout the world, so that we can now, and the spread of technology throughout the world that now allows us to have a global consciousness. We do have a global consciousness now in a primitive sense. You can speak English on the internet with people all over the world. I do this on a daily basis. I'm a correspondent with Press TV for the Iranians. Largely because of English and because of internet technology. So the end of the American Empire has provided this. Now it will pass from the scene, and something, I assume, something better will take its place. I would be happy if we could go back to becoming a republic, that we didn't have to use all these resources to be the policemen for the world and impose our system on the world. And it's going to happen no matter what Trump does. The only question is, will it be violent or will it be peaceful? And I think, I'm hoping that it will be peaceful.
Hmm. Yeah, you see, you mentioned the Holy Roman Empire. It kind of played out in the East, too, with the Byzantine Empire. So were you more referencing like the transition from the Caesars to, I guess, the Holy Roman Empire in the West, and then the Byzantine Empire in the East?
Well, the Byzantine Empire outlasted the empire in the West by 1,000 years. So the Roman Empire collapsed between 412 and 475, and the Byzantine Empire didn't collapse until 1,000 years later. The crucial element in that regard was the Council of Florence, which was in 1439. The emperor in the East realized that the Turks were on the march. He was in Constantinople, and so they had their famous last stand in Constantinople. Count Vlad the Impaler, the model for Count Dracula, showed up to help defend the empire against the Turks, but it didn't work. There was just too much dissonance. The Council of Florence resolved all of the differences between the East and the Western Church to everyone's satisfaction, and then the Orthodox prelates went back, and the people or the clergy in their native places rejected the resolution. That led to the failure to defend Constantinople, and that led to the rise of Islam. And Islam became a major threat for Europe all the way up into the Battle of Vienna, when Jan Sobieski and the Poles basically saved Vienna from the Turks. So for the next 400 years, what am I saying, 400, 200 years, the Turks were a threat to Europe because the Christians could not achieve unity. And that unity is still eluding us.
Well, God willing, we can East and West resolve our differences at some point. you kind of already alluded to this, but with the pornography, how did that get wrapped up into the whole free speech thing? And who is behind it? And it seems oddly connected to the same people that are now behind the censorship of truth.
Absolutely. You're talking about the Jews. Okay. Pornography is a Jewish creation. If without Jews, there would be no pornography. Same thing with abortion. Without Jews, there would be no abortion in this country. And so over the period, the big battle occurred in the late 1920s, early 1930s, between the Catholic Church and the Jews in Hollywood. The Jews had gone into debt to finance talking pictures. The Catholics persuaded one of the Italian bankers not to lend them money. And at the same time, they threatened the Jews with a boycott of film, of their theaters. And in 1932, Cardinal Doherty of Philadelphia did, in fact, call a boycott. And Harry Warner, according to Joe Breen, was crying tears as big as horse turds because he was losing $100,000 a week in Philadelphia alone. And that was $100,000 real dollars, or significant dollars, not inflated dollars. And so the Jews backed down and they put the production code. They allowed the production code to be imposed upon them, and they didn't like it. And for 30 years, they put up with it. And then they saw their chance in the 1960s, largely because of the Second Vatican Council, which said that the Jews were our friends. And so they broke the code. They had to use the Holocaust to break the code. I just did a piece on the other angle of this story, which I had missed earlier. And this is the Swedish angle of that story. This was a multinational, international conspiracy to break the code. And the crucial figure in this regard from an artistic point of view was Ingmar Bergman, who had a monopoly on, not a monopoly, but he was the foremost exponent of art film. And if you want, and so at this point, if this film had redeeming social value, it wasn't obscene, no matter how much skin or sex was in the film. And that was precisely there was a collaboration here between Harry Schein, a Jew who was living in Sweden at the time. He was the go-between Bergman and Hollywood, and they came up with a film called The Silence, which was explicitly created as a code breaker. And it did break the code in both Sweden and Germany. I tell the story in my book on Werner Heisenberg and Jewish science about what happened in Germany. And if you want to hear the Swedish angle, it's in the September issue of Culture Wars magazine. But basically, it didn't work in America, so they had to pull out the big guns, and that was namely the Holocaust. They had to use the Holocaust to smuggle bare breasts onto the screen. And the censors at the Catholic Legion of Decency were just too intimidated by the Holocaust. This was 1965, the end of the council. Nostra Aetate had passed. Jews were our friends now. We can't criticize them. And so the production code was broken. And within 7 years, we had hardcore pornography in first-run theaters. Pornography has shifted. It's always a function of technology. So it shifted away from the movie theaters with the creation of VHS technology. And now it's primarily a function of the internet. That's where you go for pornography. But at this point, the big taboo was to break into mainstream first-run theaters. And that's exactly where Deep Throat ended up, in a series of pornographic movies like that. Big first-run movies. Last Tango in Paris, another example of this type of thing happening. Over this period of time, the same Jews who are now screaming for censorship on the internet were saying there should be no censorship, because they didn't have the power that they wanted. And so there were Supreme Court cases fought by people like Leo Pfeffer, a lawyer for the American Jewish Committee, who said Jews are against censorship. Well, that's a joke. I mean, say that now, it's the exact opposite. You know, the Jews are, the ADL, the Anti-Defamation League, is the main engine promoting censorship because of hate speech. The ADL has created the term hate speech simply to promote Jewish interests. Also, if you're interested in the full story here, read my book, ebook, Jewish Privilege. Go to Amazon Kindle, E. Michael Jones, Jewish Privilege, and you'll hear the whole story there.
I am buying that today. so the analysis, I mean, would it be a good analysis that their primary motivator seems to be just power?
Absolutely. That is the primary motivation of fallen man, is libido dominandi, dominate other people for your good. It's the opposite of Christianity. Christianity's primary rule is love of neighbor. Love your neighbor as you love yourself, and love of God. St. Augustine formulated it when he said, you know, love of God to the extinction of self, that's the city of God. The city of man is love of self to the extinction of God. And that's what we're seeing working out in our day. And so, yes, control is the main thing that these people who control the city of man, that's the main thing they're interested in.
Okay. I know we're coming up on the end here. Personally, I guess, well, not personally, but on an individual practical level, what can we all do to help restore our society and culture?
First, you have to gain control of your own passions. You have to subject your passions to rational control. That will allow you to, that will make you available to other people so that you can unite with other people. The first way that people unite, the primary way, is marriage. So you will be available for marriage now in a way that you are not if you're addicted to pornography or drugs or any other thing that makes you irrational. You have to become rational if you want to become attractive to a member of the opposite sex. And then once you find that person and you get married, you start a family. And that is the cell of society. And all reform comes out of that cell. Those families can group together in rational formations and neighborhoods. And then that's how the political process gets reformed from below.
Good. Well, thank you very much for coming on, Doctor. Where is the primary place that my listeners can find your work?
Go to culturewars.com. All of the back issues of Culture Wars magazine there, and all of my books are available there. Sometimes people have trouble accessing them, but they're all available at culturewars.com or fidelitypress.org. Both of these things will give you access to the books and all of our material.
Awesome. Well, that was great. Thank you for coming on Hearth and Fire, and thank you, listeners, for giving us another listen. I know that you had to enjoy this. It was truly an honor to have you on, Dr. E. Michael Jones.
My pleasure.
All right. Thank you, and hopefully we can do this again sometime. I really liked it.
Yes, thank you.
All right. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.